the deputy walks on hard nails, the preacher rides a mount. But nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a futile horn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Moonstone Collective, an artisan boutique featuring locally crafted textiles, unique jewelry, and a henna studio. Moonstone supports local artists, providing a platform for creative minds to explore their potential and to interact with the community that supports them. Visit Moonstone at 835 Main Street, Thursday through Sunday, 10 to 6 p.m., or on Facebook and Instagram at Moonstone Collective, or call them at 487-7271. Moonstone, art on the rise. And the Chico, and by the Chico Downtown Business Association, supporting downtown Chico of over 40 years. The CBBA brings you the Thursday night markets, the Friday night concert series, A Taste of Chico, the Christmas preview, and the tree lighting, Treat Street, and more. For a full schedule of what's happening downtown, visit downtownchico.com. Help keep Chico vibrant by shopping local and coming downtown. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to give you some updates on stories we've covered in the past and share a clip of an interview with animal rights philosopher Tom Regan. Regan?
It's Tom Regan.
It's
just
Tom
like,
Regan.
Just like President Regan.
One less A. Anyway, spelling aside, let's get things started, Jeannie.
Thanks so much. So, we have an update on the foie gras ban in California. Listeners may remember that we reported on gourmands and foodies across California who rejoiced last year after a federal judge overturned a California state ban on the sale of foie gras that made the sale of foie gras illegal.
We also call those folks jerks and cruel people.
Yes, people who value their palates over their humanity and their compassion. Anyway, I'm glad to report that the so-called delicacy of foie gras may again disappear from California restaurant menus after the Ninth Circuit Court indicated last Wednesday that foie gras production is cruel, signaling very strongly from the bench that it will uphold the California law. So foie gras, which is fatty duck or goose liver, is prized by foodies for its rich flavor. But animal rights activists have long maintained that the market for the delicacy drives poultry producers to cruelly force-feed the birds. There's no other way to actually get this, quote, product. The process is called gavage, and it is when large amounts of meal, grains and such, are pumped into the bird's stomach through a tube stuck down the bird's esophagus. That overfeeding process eventually results in a grossly enlarged fatty liver that is 10 times the size of a normal liver. It essentially produces a diseased liver for consumption.
Gross. And if you know your French, gavage means force feeding, and yet for some odd reason we didn't translate that in our marketing over here.
Yeah, and fatty liver is a condition that some waterfowl put on. They consume mass amounts of food in order to prepare for their migration.
Right.
And so there is some, these birds are naturally prone and adapted to thick and thin through fat and lean, but this is a perturbation of that. It's an aberrant exploitation of this natural behavior. So anyway, I'm happy to report here. This is what the judge said on it. Do you think the duck enjoys that? Demanded U.S. Ninth Circuit Judge Harry Pragerson at a hearing last week. And without missing a beat, he continued by saying, I think it's absolutely cruel. Are there any other situations that we know of where the food is rammed down the throat of the creature? Rammed down. You hold its neck up and you just force it right down so that their liver eventually blows. End quote.
Yeah, and he's not hiding behind any French words there.
No, he's not. And, I may be imputing more emotion into the words than he actually had, but those are pretty forceful.
Definitely.
Opinions from someone who is probably not naturally like a gung-ho animal rights advocate like you
or I. I mean, judges pick their words very carefully, so no matter how he said it, he wouldn't use those words if he didn't intend for them to be clear.
And I think that the average citizen would find it ghastly to consume a product like this. It's only when you, as I said, value your palate over your compassion that this sort of, quote, food becomes something even thinkable, right?
Right.
So back in 2004, California legislators had outlawed the sale of force-fed poultry products, and they called this force-feeding practice inhumane. No two ways about it. At that time, several restaurateurs sued to overturn the ban the day it went into effect in 2012. So it was passed in 2004. It didn't come into effect until 2012, presumably to allow the foie gras, quote, producers to find a less cruel way than gavage.
I mean, as I recall, there's like two companies in California that do it or something, and it was to give them time to either, get out of business. And
And so, anyway, and part of the argument in this case was that state-level prohibitions on force feeding conflicted with a federal act, the Poultry Products Inspection Act. And what the judge said was that while the Federal Poultry Act prohibits states from creating their own ingredient requirements or bans, it doesn't apply to the foie gras ban because that's a ban on how the animals are treated. It's a humane legislation.
Right, they're not banning the product. They're banning how the product comes to be.
Right. And it's not primarily to regulate any particular ingredients. So that is, of interest to me.
Definitely. Our second news story tonight is on wildlife services. We've covered wildlife services before, which the secretive and insidious federal agency that uses taxpayer dollars to routinely kill millions of wild animals of all shapes and sizes. The agency killed 2.7 million animals in 2014 alone. Many of those animals were killed at the request of ranchers because they were, quote, threatening their cows. I've never really seen that, but back in August, we shared that Butte County itself has a yearly $67,000 contract with Wildlife Services to pay for a full-time wildlife specialist to kill Butte County animals that interfere with ranchers, farmers, and citizens. I'm assuming the wildlife specialist specializes here in killing.
Yes, that's what that means.
Yes.
Trained killers.
Butte County pays part of the cost of that whole program, which had a total budget of $102,000.
Yeah, but there's basically a full-time wildlife specialist who gets paid, if I recall correctly, about $32 an hour plus benefits.
Yeah.
And then all the toys and paraphernalia that he needs to, quote, do his job.
Right, which also probably become tax deductions as they depreciate, etc. Sadly, we have no great news to report from Butte County, but we are happy to report that the Oregon Department of Agriculture, the ODA, is planning to eliminate state funding for its wildlife services program. That move will save the state more than $460,000, nearly half a million.
So this is a lot of taxpayer money, right? Yeah, I mean, you have the federal money, and then you have state and, in our case, Butte, you know, county money.
Yeah, I mean, we have many social ills going on, and where do we want to spend this money? I know I was listening to Bill's show on the way in about, you know, the various homeless programs and initiatives. You could feed and home a lot of people. Unfortunately, in Oregon, the Wildlife Services Program will still go on, but the state will not be spending taxpayer money to support it. Counties and landowners will foot the bill to maintain the current service level, and I would be surprised if they, you know, really continue to pay for it.
Right? Oh, yeah. I think, you know, it will have to drop.
These things are always literally, they cry wolf, you know, right?
Yeah.
I saw a wolf somewhere in the neighborhood. You better kill it. It's going to threaten my cows.
Yeah, and I think actually they target coyotes more than wolves, but yeah.
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 Additionally, dairies and other confined animal feeding operations, or CAFOs,
CAFOs,
will also face higher fees to compensate for a $250,000 cut to the ODA's CAFO inspection program. Kind of a lot of acronyms there.
Yeah.
The ODA and other state agencies are planning for program cuts because the Oregon state government is facing a budget deficit, mostly due to increasing pension and health care costs for its employees. It makes financial sense for taxpayers to stop footing the bill for a small sector of the economy. This is really, when we talk about smaller government, this is the kind of smaller government you want.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, it's a small sector, meaning that there's very few people who make a living off of
right.
Killing animals, right? It may be a big part of some people's dietary budgets, and I don't want to minimize that, although they should minimize it as a part of their food budget. But in effect, these types of programs helps us subsidize a small sector of our economy.
Definitely. And as we talked about before, they're not data-driven. They're not really fact-based, as we said. It's just very anecdotal. I saw a coyote come in and kill everything for 100 miles.
Right, right. So, yeah, and you know, and this agency, the Wildlife Services, quote, services agency, has killed at least 2 million mammals and 15 million birds, as well as a lot of, like, non-target animals, so non-bothersome animals, including some endangered species and including people's pets. Because a dog isn't that different from a coyote, right? If a coyote is the animal that you say is threatening your cattle, your neighbor's dog could end up eating the poison that they lay out for that.
And just,
for that,
I mean, we've had friends that have lost dogs just to random rodent poison left around places, and spreading poison out like that out in the rural areas is just a terribly bad idea.
And then I was reviewing my notes from the show that we did back in November, I was stunned again to see that Shasta County spends $118,000 on a similar wildlife services contract, which is just that's a very sparsely populated county, Shasta County, compared to Butte County, I think, and definitely compared to like the more urban counties, and that is a lot of money to be spending.
It just doesn't. I mean, if it's a real case of something happening, regardless of the fact we don't want people, you know, raising cows anyway, but like, how is it the government has to foot this bill?
Right.
I don't understand that.
It's time for a change. Huh?
Yes.
Time to drain the swamp. Huh? So anyway, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It's nice to share at least a little bit of good news. It's not like right home to mom great news, but it shows that there's pushes and nudges in the system against this agency.
Yeah, no, I like you keeping track of the previous shows and data and following back up on it to kind of keep on top of the issue.
Yeah, so if you just tuned in, this is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, foothills, and beyond, and you are listening to Non-Human Radio, where we talk about animal rights and veganism, and I'm Jeannie, and that's Danny, and this week, instead of additional news, I'd like to share a clip from one of my favorite animal rights philosophers, who goes by the name of Tom Regan. He doesn't go by the name of, that is his name, Dr. Tom Regan. He's a PhD, he's a retired professor of philosophy from North Carolina State University, where he taught for a long time, and he retired back in 2001. His 1983 book, The Case for Animal Rights, is one of a handful of books that have significantly influenced the modern animal rights movement. You can point to a lot of middle-aged animal rights activists,
sure,
and they will have read The Case for Animal Rights or the 1975 book Animal Liberation by Peter Singer, and or the 1987 book Diet for a New America by John Robbins. Those are the three like must-reads if you were into animal advocacy back in the 80s.
Almost a holy trinity, we might say.
So, and Tom Reagan's philosophical approach to animal advocacy is to say that non-human animals are what he calls the subjects of a life, and that is just like humans are. That, and if we want to ascribe value to all human beings, regardless of their ability to be rational agents, then to be consistent, we must similarly assign that to non-humans. So in a nutshell, what he's getting at, and what he'll talk about in the clip, is that just as your life story is uniquely yours, right? So your life story, you were born, you have a mom and dad who you love, you have siblings that you also love, right? And eventually you grow up and maybe you get married or in a relationship and you have kids. These are all your life story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that your life is filled with both pleasure and pain. So every human and also non-human animal has a similar unique life story that is theirs and that matters to them. And we are all individuals going through that process. So therefore, we are all subjects of a life, and we are all similar in that way. We, meaning humans and non-humans at the same time. So I wanted to share a clip of Tom Reagan being interviewed by a guy named Pat Kenny, who was an Irish talk show host. This is Irish TV.
Yeah, yeah.
On YouTube from the 2000s, right?
Yeah, I know you're going to say this is from something called The Late Late Show. And
right.
As I watched, I'm like, I think this might be a different Late Late Show.
Yeah.
I might not know the names of nightly shows anymore.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, oh, wait, isn't that the name of, like, is it, I don't know if it's Jimmy Kimmel or who on modern TV is talking about that. But anyway, so let's go ahead and give a listen to this and hopefully.
I also like how, and you'll hear, maybe I should say this after, like, it's a very respectful conversation, and I'm not sure we would get that these days.
Yeah, and it's not humorous or anything. And this is only part one of like a four-part interview. So it's just a short clip from a longer civil conversation.
Now, what's interesting, Tom, about you is it used to be a butcher.
That's true. And first, let me thank you for the
animals, he says, have the same rights as humans, and we are being racist in our treatment of them. He's sitting beside me, Professor Tom Reagan. You're very welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Reagan.
Thank you.
And what's interesting, Tom, about you is that you used to be a butcher.
That's true. And first, let me thank you for the opportunity to be here and express my ideas. But yeah, when I was growing up in the industrial part of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, back in the States, I came from a meat and potatoes family.
Yeah.
And for my father, having meat on the table was a sign that he was succeeding. He was living the American dream. And so when I was in college to earn money to help pay the bills for college, I worked as a butcher. And it wasn't anything that I thought about as something raising any kind of ethical question for me at all.
What brought about the change?
Well, so far as I have an insight into that, it was a combination of factors, but the most important thing was my wife, who's Nancy Reagan, by the way. I always tell people that, you know, I'm married to Nancy Reagan, but my wife Nancy and I were active in the anti-war movement during the Vietnam period. And we were thinking that America should not be involved in that war because it was involved violence that we didn't think could be justified. And during that period, we thought about other aspects of our life that might involve violence. And we read Gandhi's work, and Gandhi's basically spoke from the page to us, said, if you think that violence against human beings is wrong, if you can't justify it, how can you justify those dead body parts you mentioned in your freezer? What's the necessity of that in your life? And if you can justify that, please tell me, Professor Reagan, so to speak. And if not, think about it. And so we thought about it, and we couldn't find a good reason that would justify that kind of violence.
What is the argument you have, though? I mean, from time immemorial, in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, people have been killing the animals of the earth or taking the fish from the sea in order to provide nourishment for them and their families.
Sure. Well, first off, actually, in the Bible, if we talk about the Bible, and then I'll talk about the other question, part of the question you asked. But in the Bible, if you actually look at what's said in Eden, when Adam and Eve are in Eden, before the fall, before the disobedience, if you look at the diet that's given to human beings in that state of perfection, this is what God hoped for, the best for human beings, it was actually a vegan diet. It was herbs and nuts and berries and the like.
How do we know this?
Well, it says it in Genesis, verse 1:29.
Did he not give them dominion over all the creatures of the earth?
No, this is after the fall. This is after the period of disobedience and the expulsion from the garden.
But I mean, can I just interrupt you to say that, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, but Eve was told by the Lord to stay away from apples. So, I mean, I don't think we should go too far down that road. It's just that killing the fatted calf, the sacrificial lamb, the loaves and the fishes, you know, it's all there.
Well, I only want to say that that's half of the story, not the whole story. So to the extent that you want to bring the Bible in, the Bible is a mixed message. But the other, the more fundamental point, I think, is this, that we don't think that we find out how we should live by finding out how others have lived in the past. We don't usually make that inference. We don't think that we should be not having our television sets and not using our computers and so on because our ancestors didn't do that. We don't think that we should continue to practice slavery today in America because our ancestors did that. We don't usually reason from the past as a basis for what we should do in the present. And so even if it were true that uniformly in the past all our predecessors have eaten animals, it doesn't follow that we should. Okay. And in fact, of course, the vast majority of people in the world today don't eat animals. Two-thirds of the world's population doesn't involve animal products.
Do you believe, though, that the reason you shouldn't eat animals is because the animals have the same rights as we have?
I don't think they have all the same rights, and no animal rights person thinks that, Pat. I think that we don't think they should have the right to vote, and we don't think they should have the right to divorce, and we don't think they should have those sorts of rights. What we do think is really very simple. We think that they should have we should recognize the right to be treated with respect in their case that we recognize in your case. And what that means in particular is this. If everybody in the audience would benefit by exploiting you, I would stand up and defend you and say this is not a justified treatment of you just because others are going to benefit. That's what the right to be treated with respect involves. So similarly, what an animal rights person thinks is that other animals should not be treated in the way we treat them just because we're going to benefit from doing it, because we find it convenient, because we find it economically advantageous, because we find it customary, because we find it enjoyable. Those are not sufficiently good reasons to violate somebody's rights.
Where do you stop coming down? I mean, lots of people would say, I would never eat an ape because, you know, they're so like us.
Sure.
And other people say, I never eat my pet dog because I know my dog has an intelligence and I like my dog and my dog likes me.
Sure.
But what about the wasp? You know, what about the mosquito?
Right.
Where do you stop in terms of affording respect to other living creatures on the earth?
I think that is a profoundly difficult question, and I always say that wherever you draw the line, draw it with a pencil, because you might want to erase it because you find something out that you didn't know before. But
where do you draw the line?
Yeah, where I draw the line is with animals that where we have sufficiently good reason to think that they're not only in the world, but aware of the world, and aware of what happens to them, and that what happens to them matters to them, and in particular, that they can experience pain and pleasure, fear, and relief. So where that is, I'm not sure exactly, but it certainly is the case that the animals that are raised, commercially raised for our food, cattle, sheep, hogs, those animals, chickens, certainly are above the line wherever any reasonable person would draw it. What you do about mollusk and oysters and so on, I don't know. But I give them the benefit of the doubt because I have no reason to eat them.
We used to.
Right, we should give the animals the benefit of the doubt, and we should draw that line for cows, chickens, and pigs with a Sharpie, indelible Sharpie, right?
Right.
So I really liked that interview. I really liked, as you said, how respectful they were towards each other. And I particularly like the idea that, you know, just because we've always done it, i.e. eat animals, doesn't mean that we need to continue to do it. Right? It's just a weak argument.
Yeah, no, he's, you know, obviously he's a philosophy professor there and very nicely, preemptively shuts down lots of sort of rhetorical arguments that people make, just shouting louder and louder, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to give rights to protozoans, huh? And it's irrelevant. And that's kind of what he says there. You know, you're drawing a line. There's an obvious line with all the major animals. We don't live like cavemen. We don't write on stone tablets.
Right, and we use our computers, and we use cars and all that. So, yeah, we aren't dialing back to the past on those issues.
Right.
So, and if folks were wondering, the biblical passage that he was referencing is from Genesis 1:29. And just one of the translations, it reads, one of the biblical translations, it reads, "And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree, in which is the fruit of the tree, yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat." So I picked that particular translation because I think it's interesting that that translation calls herbs and seeds and the products thereof meat.
Ah, that's why you chose it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that in the history of the word. Myself, I'm not going to be swayed by what dozens of people wrote thousands of years ago. But, yeah, some people are. I also liked, you know, his rationale for sort of going this. Obviously, it was a very rational approach. You know, I want to not cause suffering. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I'm protesting war and violence. But violence is going on right here. And I think a lot of social change in general is, you know, related to being rational, fact-based. Emotion drives you into the arena. But, you know, trying to argue with that emotion isn't, I mean, it is helpful. But it's not the bedrock of why you're doing what you're doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that, you know, cooler heads prevail, and I just like when people start thinking and expanding their circle of compassion, and you start looking at human violence, and then you say, "Whoa, if I'm against that, what is so different about the violence that's on my plate?"
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, maybe this is a common story for all vegetarians and vegans or not, but you know, his approach there was kind of very similar to my own thinking going vegetarian. I think I lost my grandmother. I might have lost a cat. I started thinking about how much that sucked and life and death, and I'm cooking up a steak, and this is just muscle tissue.
Yeah.
This is just some other animal. And I don't want to be a hypocrite. So personally, a lot of what he's saying there, and people in general, can be pretty do as I say, not as I do, you know?
Yep.
And I hate that, right? Passion for my own personal, you know, reasons. We all got issues, people. But, you know, if you don't want to be a hypocrite, it's very clear reasoning to go vegetarian, to go vegan, or to move from vegetarian to vegan, because that is your belief. Be true to thine own self, or to thine own self be true, as Shakespeare said.
And you feel good for it, too.
Yeah.
And you'll probably be healthier, and you'll have a smaller impact on the environment.
Definitely.
So, we have one last bit of business to take care of. Let's go for the quote of the week.
All righty. The quote is coming. The animal rights thought or quote of the week is from Dr. Tom Regan, the philosopher who we just heard on the clip earlier. Here's a thought from him to reflect on. Everyone understands that there is a limit to what we can do in the name of defending the victims of injustice. We simply cannot do everything for every victim. For all of us, however, this limit is not zero. That we cannot do everything in defense of those who cannot defend themselves does not mean that we should content ourselves with doing nothing.
Right. Absolutely. So,
yep.
Do something for the animals. Do something about the violence in the world, and carry on.
Yep,
so.
Do something, do the best you can.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. And please don't forget to send in your pledge if you pledge during the pledge drive. Your pledge is very important to KZFR. And thank you so much for all your love and support. Non-Human Radio is made possible